We now present Memories of the Past, brought to you by the Van Zandvoort Memorial Chapel of Grand Haven.
Good afternoon. It's 4:40 once again, and that time of the month, and our special guest is John Van Skelman. John, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Doug.
I like this time of the month, when it's time for you to come up here and do this.
You know, I do too after I get going, but you know, when I come up here, I don't know what in the same hill we're going to talk about. So, after we find out something to talk about, we get going, it's fun.
Have you heard that that new radio series we have on Lum and Abner?
No.
Well, you remember Lum and Abner, don't you?
Yeah,
We had all those mics here gathered around here for you this evening or this afternoon. And that reminded me of, I was joking about being like Gabriel
one
Peter.
For each, one character for each?
Well, they had a bunch of people up here. But I was thinking of the old time radio. Did that used to be good entertainment, the old radio?
Sure was. You know, I think it was more fun than television.
Well, it left a lot more of the imagination, didn't
that's
it?
That's just it, because you, well, there was one program that I particularly remember, and I don't know whether I can tell you the name of it or not, but it was a first nighter show. I don't remember the name of the thing, but anyway, in my imagination, this was in, I think they called it the Little Theater on Times Square. I believe that was the name of the program. And I've never been in Times Square, so I don't know what it looks like, except from pictures. And I could just imagine this little theater, and, when I mean little, it didn't compare with the old Empress or Keith in Grand Rapids, but in my mind, it was a small theater, maybe about the size of the old Temple Theater here or the Orpheum. And they would have these programs in there, and they'd play the play, and then they'd announce that there was only smoking in the lobby, and the kind of the intermission.
Mm-hmm.
And you could just, or at least I did, and I suppose everybody else did, imagine the people in there, and the show was over, so they went out into the lobby for a smoke, and the Falder Olive and Long. Yes, I always got a kick out of that. Another one I always got a kick out of was Fibber McGee and Molly.
Yeah. We've just got through with that series.
Did
we've
you?
Been running that for a year. Old original tapes.
Yeah, you did?
Yeah, we've had it on for a year now.
I sure used to love to listen to that.
I like that when he opened up his closet.
When he opened the closet, And what was the fellow's name? He used to talk about his big old wife, and he looked in his bird book. His bird
that
book.
Was,
Mr. Wimple. Yeah. Mr. Wimple,
Bird book?
Bird book, Well, you know, most of those things were all done by one fellow. That is, those characters.
There were a lot of people that did a very few. I mean, a lot of characters were done by a very few
that's
people.
That's right.
Well, Gildersleeve did quite a few of those, didn't he? Harold Perry?
Yeah, I still repeat Gildersleeve every once in a while. Somebody will say something, and I say, well, I wouldn't say that, Peavy. I wouldn't say that, Peavy.
Yeah.
And every once in a while, somebody will say, well, it's going to rain or something like that. So I say, well, I wouldn't say that, Peavy. But there were a lot of those old expressions.
Yeah.
I remember when radio first came out, we had those old-fashioned sets that, a lot of the fellows made them. I remember one fellow by the name of McGregor out in the East End town. McGregor was a mechanic or machinist or engineer at Gardner Denver, which was Keller Tool Company in those days. I guess that's even before it was Keller Tool Company, William H. Keller and Company. And Mac lived out at 111 Hopkins Street, and he was quite a friend of Bob Radicke. Bob worked out there, too. Mac had a radio, and it was built on the table just exactly like this one, with a linoleum top.
Mm-hmm.
And it took up the whole front end of that table.
Good.
He had tubes on it, I told you, didn't know what. And to me, not being familiar with any of that stuff, I didn't know what. Bob built one. He made a radio, but Mac had this big one. I think he called it the Super Heterodyne. And this was before I was married. I used to, Bob and I used to pal around, and we would go out to Max at 11 o'clock at night. Now it's 11 o'clock at night. I've been sleeping for an hour. But we used to go out there about 11 o'clock, and at 12 o'clock at night, you could get KFI, California.
Really?
On that set. Now, if anybody had a radio set in those days that you could get California on, he had some set.
I'll bet.
Of course, there weren't any networks like there are now. And then there was another one that was Calumet Baking Powder. That was in Pittsburgh. I've forgotten the call letters of it. But they were a couple of the real stations. And then there was one somewhere, Cincinnati, Ohio, I believe, had a good one.
WLW,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And there was another good one. That's still a good station, WGN, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that was a cleared channel.
And we had a...
Would they come in good?
Well,
that thing from California. Could you understand what they were saying?
Yes, they weren't bad. They were better than a lot of these CB radios that you got in the car.
Well, what kind of an antenna would he have up there?
Oh, very big, long. No, he'd have a wire stretch, one wire.
Yeah.
And he'd have that stretch from one end of the lot to the other. Just a big, long wire, and as high up as they could get them.
Yeah.
I remember that was about the time that they had the barn down here. You've heard me talk about the barn. Well, there was a fellow by the name of Dick Lucky had an orchestra. And we had a young fellow around here who was about our age. His name was Herman Minnith. And Herman had played in Thompson's Jackie Band. And he played a tuba. And he got to playing with Dick Lucky and his orchestra. And after the barn closed, or after Dick's, I guess it was at the end of the season, they went to Dallas, Texas, Dick Lucky. And Dick Lucky had good orchestra. It was that compared with, he didn't go as far as Lawrence Welk and some of the other big ones. Can't think of the name of them now. When I get out of here, I'll think of them. But he went down to Dallas, Texas, and we used to get that quite late at night. And that was always fun because we wanted to listen to Hermie go poop, poop, poop with his big bass horn.
Yeah.
And we picked him out, of course. We knew a few of the rest of the fellows in this Dick Lucky's orchestra. But that was always fun.
Well, Crystal Radio, did you ever have a Crystal
radio? No. The first radio we had, I don't remember what it was. It was down home. I remember we had Amos and Andy.
Oh, yeah, that was a good program.
And my dad used to just love to listen to Amos and Andy.
Yeah.
And I remember, radio just was new.
Sure.
A couple of years before that, nobody ever heard of a radio or anything coming in the house without any wires or anything.
No.
And I see my dad yet. He used to go and sit right in front of that radio and listened to Amos and Andy, and he would chuckle to himself. And he said to me one night, he says, you know, he says, I don't believe it. I don't believe that's coming in out of that box, please, and it's all for our fun listening to it. He just couldn't understand how, if you could get that. And that was on Majestic, I believe, was one of the first ones.
Sure. Was that a floor model, Len?
The Majestic was a floor model, yeah.
On legs, or was it...
On legs,
yeah. I remember
our
first
one. The first one I had after we were married, I think, was a Hayes. You never heard of that? Well, that was built in town here. We had the old Panhard Motor building, which is now part of Gardner Denver's, and the Hayes Ionia people were going to build automobile bodies in there. And I don't know, that didn't work too well or something when they were with it. But they started building radios. And that didn't work either. No, it didn't go. And so there was a fellow by the name of Sanders, an awfully nice man. He had a nice family, too. Mr. Sanders was a fine gentleman. And he was running that plant, and of course, when they went haywire, they sold out those radios. Now, this was a one that was about the size of the end of the table here, 3 feet long, 2.5 feet, three long. Had 3 or 4 dials on the front. It was a battery-operated
set. My goodness, what kind of batteries did that take?
A regular automobile battery.
Is that right?
6-volt battery. And the speaker stood on top of it. And so I bought one of those sets from Hayes Ionia people. I don't know what it cost. It couldn't cost as much because it didn't have much in those days. I just got married, and that was our first radio. And so then I bought a cabinet. I don't know where the dickens I got that. I picked that up somewhere at a bargain. That was a cabinet on legs, and it had room in it to put the battery.
Oh.
And then the speaker was on top of it. And as I say, it had 3 dials on it.
What were all the dials for?
I don't know. I don't know what a radio. I don't know anything about radio now, except how you turn the switch on.
Yeah.
But I remember I did do this. We had a Victrola.
Oh yes.
In those days, and I wired the thing up so that I ran the wires under the floor of the house. We didn't have a basement in that house up on Howard Street. Not a full basement anyway. I ran the wires from the radio under the floor and up into the other room, and so I had a speaker in the phonograph. I used the phonograph speaker, so I had a twin speaker.
Well, the Victrola didn't have any electricity in it.
How
did that speaker ever work? I'm trying to recall that now too, because we had one with a crank on the side. But how did that? What powered that loudspeaker? I wonder.
The power came from the radio. And I'll be darned if I remember how I did it.
Yeah.
But it worked all right.
It did, huh?
Well, the first one that Bob Radke made, when this McGregor made a set, Bob Radke was a pretty good mechanic, and he was electrically minded, could read the blueprints, and I don't know, I guess he got one of those popular mechanics books or something of that sort. And anyway, he built one, and I remember he had that set up in the corner of his living room down on Fulton Street, and he didn't have a speaker on it. That is, no, he had earphones.
Mm-hmm.
And he would sit there with earphones and listen to the radio. His mother would be in bed, and it'd be late at night. And we used to go down there and each take an earphone.
Oh, yeah.
Well, then finally we picked up an old phonograph horn, a big one. I don't know where it came from or what it came off from or anything else. We set the earphone on the floor in the corner and then set this speaker horn on top of it.
Would that work?
Yeah, it worked all right.
Did it really?
Yeah. Didn't sound like a stereo or like a modern radio now, but you could hear it. And more than one time, we'd get some station late at night, and both of us sit there listening to it and go to sleep.
Really?
Wake up at 1:30, 2:00 in the morning and go home, I suppose. Everybody wondered where we were.
I suppose.
Well, I suppose, I don't imagine we were too much different than kids nowadays, except we didn't go knocking over any gravestones in the cemetery or any problems like that. I think that's terrible.
Well, I do, too.
But,
Well, a while back, now, I recall that since I've lived here in Grand Haven, you let us borrow an old radio one time for a Radio Month display when they had the old security showcase. And I don't know where that came from or whether it was yours, but do you remember that radio?
I don't know where it came from, yes. That was in Atwater, Kent.
Is that in Atwater, Kent?
Yeah. I'll never forget that one. A fella came in one time, and he said to Mr. Oakes, he said, I have my mother here, and he said, I run out of money. He said, if you loan me $10, he said, I'll leave my radio as security. Well, the boss didn't know the fella, but he knew his cousin. He told us who his cousin was. So he loaned him the $10, and he left that radio here. What he did was sold that radio to the boss for $10. He had no intention of ever coming back here. And he was from Chicago. And I remember one time I was in Chicago, and near where this fellow lived. He lived near somewhere near the Cubs ballpark.
Oh, really?
And I went over there, and I asked an old gent there if Mr. I've forgotten his name, Smith or Jones or whatever it was, lived there, and the old fellow spoke kind of broken, and he said, "Did he sting you too?" So
I'm thinking that that was
wrong. Well, I used to monkey with that thing down in the basement of the office once in a while. I had a little time, and about 6 months ago or some fellow working for the gas company saw it down there, and he said, "I got a set like that, but," he said, "I got a part that's missing." He said, "I'll give you $10 for it," and I said, "Take it." So,
shoot, that radio's gone now, isn't it?
It's gone now. But, boy, it played.
Did it play?
Yeah, but the speaker wasn't any good anymore. That was Atwater Kent. And Atwater Kent made those radios as table models. And there was a metal box over it.
That was a big radio, though, John.
Yeah, it was quite, 2.5 feet
yeah.
or heavier than
yeah,
that. It was all
sure
tubes
was.
And stuff.
Yeah, it was a big, big heavy
and, then they made a cabinet. Atwater Kent made a cabinet that you could set this radio in. And it had holes in the front of it so that the dials would show out through it.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't a very good-looking outfit at all. I remember Ford Barnett was the agent for them over in Kinkama Pelgrim's furniture store.
Oh.
There were a lot of them. There were a lot of those. They were a good set in those days, yes. A very good set.
We talked about those horns. Did you ever have a Victrola with one of those horns on it? Those big horns.
No. Not one of those. We had the Victrola with in a cabinet.
Yeah, with a crank on the side.
Yeah, but when we were kids, we used to build shanties in the backyard at home. My grandfather always had some old lumber laying around, or we'd pick it up somewhere or another. And folks never objected to us doing this. Of course, we had horses in the backyard in those days, which today you couldn't have.
No.
We had as many as 26 horses in the backyard down on Fulton Street.
Well, I bet they didn't like if you were pounding nails, did they?
Would
they
scare the horses? No, they didn't bother. They were all gentle. And we would build a shack. All the kids in the neighborhood, Chuck Vermeerong, Bob Radicke, and Bud Vinn, and although Bud never was much of a carpenter, you let him take the hammer and he always broke the handle or something, but anyway, he was always a pretty good scout. And we'd build a shack, and we had one of those Edison phonographs. Boy, I wish I had that thing today.
What kind was that?
Was
what
it cylinders?
Oh, yes.
The cylinders, and
yes.
That had a horn on it.
Did it?
Yeah. And we had one record on it, and I remember, and that was La Paloma.
Oh, yes.
And it had one place where it stuck. And it would, I don't know where in the world we got that thing. We know which one the kids had belonged to or where it came from. It was old then already.
Mm-hmm.
And this is back in 19, what I say, we were probably 10, 12 years old then, back in 1910 or 12, 13, somewhere along there. Well, by the time I was 13, I was working. Maybe 1910, something
mm-hmm.
like that. We'd build these shacks, and, they were fairly square and quite level. And we have a little stove in it, one of these little,
a
laundry stove there, and we could cook on it.
Really?
Of course, it was close to the house where we could get anything we needed if we weren't cooking well. But we, all the fellows in the neighborhood, we'd have lunch in the shack.
Well, you must have built a pretty good size shack.
Well, it was probably 10 feet square.
Really?
We plowed in.
Yeah.
You can be surprised how many kids you can get 10 by 10.
Well, as long as you don't listen to your one record.
We'd listen to that one record. And I remember it was close enough to the house so that we could run an electric light cord out there, so we had electric lights in the shack. We were really up to snuff. For a while, though, we had a lantern in it.
That's almost more fun.
A regular barn lantern.
Yeah,
that was more fun. Or a kerosene lamp. Yeah, that was real fun. Used to get so confirmed and hot. And
all those old shacks, I don't know why it was so much fun to be in those things. You know, it's so hot, you couldn't stand it in there.
No, and then you'd have to open the door and let the, we did have a window in it, though. I remember this one that, well, we built different shacks. We'd tear them down and remodel them or build a new one. We were always pretty good. And our tools weren't the very best. We sometimes use a buck saw instead of a hand saw. And of course, you couldn't saw anything straight with a buck saw.
Mm-hmm.
But we got along.
I should have George Kleist tell you sometime about the shack they built when they were little kids, and they were going to make wine and drink it.
Uh-oh.
And drink it on New Year's Eve. And so they got a big wash tub and filled it with grapes, and they all took off their shoes inside. And they married it in the ground in their shack for New Year's Eve.
Oh.
They opened up, but he said it was the most awful stuff.
I bet it
was. And everything else, I guess.
I bet it had flies around it.
Yeah.
Fruit flies. Well, we never did anything like that. We behaved ourselves. We had a good time, and the folks never objected to us being there when they knew, mm-hmm. they knew we were in our, yeah. in our own backyard. And neither did any of the rest of the folks around the neighborhood. If they were down there, why, they knew they were all right there.
The clubhouse idea, I guess, has always been with young kids and always will
be. Yeah, I guess so.
Tell me about this. You said that in there you had a little laundry stove.
Yeah.
I don't know what a laundry stove is.
You don't?
No. What is that?
Well, the laundry stove that they use was a stove about... Well, it would have a top on it. Well, I'll tell you where. Go down past Eddie Roberts' house. Mrs. Roberts lives there now on Sheldon Road, and there's one standing out on the front porch with flowers planted in it. But the laundry stove was a stove with a double fire pot. In other words, there was an airspace between the fire pot and between the inside and the outside, and there was an opening, a tap a pipe, one for hot water and one for cold water.
Oh.
And then you built a fire in that, and that heated the water, and you had your hot water tank alongside of it. That was instead of the electric or gas water heater as they have today. And then beside that, you could put your wash boiler on the top of it and boil the clothes. They used to boil clothes.
Boil?
Wash, yes.
What, you mean to get the bugs out?
Get the dirt out. And they'd take white clothes, or I suppose work clothes, maybe overalls and stuff that had grease in them. And they didn't have these detergents like they have today. They had Fels Naphtha or American Family Soap. I suppose there were several others. And you put them in there, and they put the water in there and put the clothes in there and get the whole kit and boodle boiling instead of putting hot water in. Let those clothes boil. And you take a stick and stir them around in that boiler.
What kind of a fire would you build that? Would you have coal?
Could have coal or wood. You'd start it with wood and then put coal in it. And if you kept coal in it, it'd keep warm for quite some time. Well, there were a lot of people used that for their hot water supply in the houses.
Well, you can't have a fire in a house, though, can you, John? I mean, you can't play around with too much fire, a wood fire or a coal fire in a...
In the basement? Sure, they'd have those things in the basement. I bet you would if you went into some basements today, you'd still find... As a matter of fact, I know. Not too long ago, I saw one of those in the house. People said it's awfully handy to burn up papers and refuse. Hooked to the chimney.
It's exposed, though, isn't it?
Oh.
Or isn't it exposed?
Well, the fire wasn't exposed.
Oh.
No, the fire was in, just like in a stove, they're cast iron.
Oh, I see.
No, I was thinking
from your description that part of the fire was exposed.
Oh, no. It had a top on it, and we call them stove lids. Two lids, and you could take them off and throw your coal or wood in there. They were nice.
Mm-hmm.
We used it in that shack. We could cook on it and everything else. I don't know where we got it. An old second-hand one. Probably the fire pot was cracked so it wouldn't hold water anymore.
Yeah.
But that didn't hurt the inside of it. Yeah. It still burned.
Yeah.
And even if you could see a little fire inside of it, as long as it didn't fall out, it was all right in the shack. It was kind of, at night, it was kind of a comfortable you've seen a little flame in there. Was real nice. Yeah. We had a couple of old chairs and stuff like that in there. We were comfortable.
Did you keep a shack during the winter? Were you able to?
Sure, we used it during the winter.
Because I bet it'd be nice. You sure. Could heat it up a little
you
bit.
You could get it hot in there. Sure. We didn't. I don't know, we just sitting there and we didn't play cards or anything as kids.
Would you read comics or weren't there comics?
Yeah, we'd read comics and stuff like
were
that.
Were there comics then?
Sure. And other books and stuff. Of course, it wasn't very good light to read by.
No,
really.
I wouldn't guess so.
We'd sit around chewing the rag mostly.
Now, how would you run an electric light out there? What did you
just
have?
Just an extension cord.
I see.
Just run it from the kitchen or from the back shed.
You wouldn't have a shack close enough that you could run a string in between the two shacks with a tin can at each end, would you?
We didn't have that in the shack. We tried that from one house to another. We tried that from Radicky's house to our house, which was one house in the barn and another house, three lots between it. The only thing you could ever hear on that was when you hit the tin can. I hit the net. You know how you did that? You put the tin can there and you put a nail across it to fasten the wire on. And if you hit that nail with a piece of metal of some sort, then the wire would rattle. That's the best we ever got out of it.
But you could never got a lot of communications.
Yeah, you could hear the it rattle on the other side. Then we'd go out on the sidewalk and say, "Could you hear me?" No, we couldn't hear it. We tried another deal that way too. We tried one of this Bob Radicky and I were pretty good pals. We used to monkey with stuff like that. We tried a telephone. We tried to fix it with batteries so that it would work. Back in the old days, when the Michigan Bell Telephone Company had one lineman and a horse and wagon. And the telephones had batteries in them, dry cells. They kept the horse down at my granddad's barn. And they would bring back all these batteries that were dead. They were used up.
Oh, you mean the phones actually had batteries?
Oh, yes.
Oh.
Sure, you remember the old phones that were on the wall?
Yes.
Had kind of a little box underneath with a place to write. And
now, that wasn't the phone that had the crank on it.
Had the crank on the side of it.
Yeah.
Well, they had batteries inside of them. Well, they'd come back with a wagon half full of those batteries. And, they were dead. They took them out because it wouldn't work anymore. So we'd hook them up. We'd take them. They wouldn't throw them away. They were no good. They let us throw them away for them instead of doing it themselves. We'd take maybe 12, 15 of those doggone batteries and hook them up in series. And you couldn't get a spark out of them.
You couldn't?
Nah. But we were just having fun with them, trying to make a telephone.
Mm-hmm.
Doug, nothing like learning the hard way.
No, that's right.
Huh? No. If anybody told us it wouldn't work, we didn't believe them.
Oh, of course not.
We knew darn well we could make them work. And Bob would have maybe a half a dozen of them over here, or maybe a dozen all hooked together, and I'd have the same thing over at our house, and we'd have a wire over the barn and the other one hooked to a water pipe. See, that was a ground. We figured that would work. Well, it didn't.
Never communicated.
No,
we didn't.
And we'd go out on the street. See, we only lived, well, there was 2 houses, maybe 500 feet apart. Go out there, could you hear me? No, we didn't hear you. What'd you say?
Yeah. The batteries were dead.
You know.
It's not our time.
Is that half hour up already?
Yes, it is.
Yeah,
and we never got on the fires.
You know, we
were talking about fires. Like, and instead, we've been talking about radios and Victrolas and all the telephones.
Talking nonsense.
John, I sure appreciated your coming up
today. Well, it was fun.
And I'm going to look forward to it again next month.
Okay. Lord willing, we'll be here.
Thank you.
Yeah. So long, Doug.
Memories of the Past was brought to you by the Van Zandt Wijk Memorial Chapel, 620 Washington, serving Western Michigan for over 50 years. You're tuned to WGHN and WGHN-FM in Grand Haven. It's 5 o'clock. The war in Lebanon and the primaries at home.
dominate the news scene today. I'm Jack Severson with WGA.